As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
I'm not sure how many times in NFL history this has been the case, but I kind of feel like we're about to talk about the extremely rare primetime trap game for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it's division rivalry primetime trap game, where we've got the division rival, we got the bright lights of Sunday Night Football, mm-hmm. We got a 10-1 football team here.
Yep.
And also, this team had to play last week without a quarterback, and even when they do have a quarterback, they haven't been very good, and they absolutely blew this team out of the water like 5 or 6 weeks ago, and they got a couple more interesting games coming around towards the end of the season. So that's where we're at. Nate, do you think that's fair? Nate Taylor of The Athletic, speaking to me, Joshua Briscoe, here on Time's Ours, a podcast about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, the trappiest of trap games, right? I mean,
yeah.
Now, I have some respect. Some for Vic Fangio. I think sure. He is good at his job. He needs mm-hmm. better players, and he needs a general manager who has a better understanding of the modern NFL. That mm-hmm. is neither here nor there. Now, I bring up Vic Fangio because can the circumstances lead to a combination of another kitchen sink game, which are incredibly becoming one of my favorites now.
It's like, yeah, absolutely.
Because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers tried to play a shootout, and we all knew by like 5 minutes into the game, what y'all doing? What are y'all doing? Okay, so you tried to play a shootout with Tom Brady. Cool. We all saw what the Carolina Panthers did. Is there enough pressure psychologically, verbally, hell, physically upon Drew Lock coming to his hometown because he didn't wear a mask the other day? Is there enough pressure that we could get a Derek Carr-like performance out of Drew Lock with Vic Fangio being like, why would I kick to the Chiefs? Hell, all the onside kicks, all the fake points. Like, we're on national TV anyway to get embarrassed, right? The only reason this game hasn't been flexed out is because Patrick Mahomes is the MVP and, like, people want to watch that, right? Like, that's the only – we are only here to be a Disney foe. Like, we're only here – to get mauled. So look, I have now motivated Broncos and Broncos fans, I'm sure, but like, feels a little trappy, just a little, just like a smidge trappy. And you hope that trap involves a kitchen sink?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like a kitchen sink trap where it's just sort of like you get your hand caught in the garbage disposal, you know, like one of those kind of games would be. Or at least keep things a little bit interesting. And that's Seth's not here today. He, you know, got very angry at me last episode and then he quit. So he'll never be back. That's not true. I can't leave it. I can't trust
Twitter.
I can't trust Twitter. I'm afraid. I trust Danielle whenever it matters, but whenever it can just get me in small amounts of trouble, I don't trust Danielle at all because she'll do that. So no, Seth is just not here today. He'll be back for the next episode theoretically.
He also, you know, he has what, 5 kids, a wife, 4 jobs.
Yeah, yeah. It's a scheduling conflict.
It just happens, you know.
Yeah. Now, I tell you what, if we would have just not mentioned it and he had left the show when he had previously planned to last episode, we'd be in a very different headspace right now because he would have, it basically would have been Seth hanging up the phone and then not picking up whenever we call, you know, like that would have been very dramatic. Unfortunately, though, for the sake of podcast downloads, that's not the truth of the matter. Fortunately, for the sake of the podcast in the interim, though, you know, in the long term, much better to know that Seth will be back soon, but he's not here today. It's just me and Nate. But I don't remember what I was going to say before that. I got very distracted by, I don't know, maybe just how weird things have been, and I needed to mention that Seth wasn't here. But, like, looking at this game and the idea that, you know, hand in the garbage disposal, whatnot.
Yes.
The idea that there could be a little, like, just a wrench thrown in somewhere, just a little bit of a surprise, a little bit caught off guard, and this is, I know this is, like, the nature of a trap game, but the thing that I keep getting back to, I honestly, it's twofold for me, and you know, we heard from Andy Reid. We're recording this on Thursday evening. We heard from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes yesterday. We heard from the coordinators earlier today. So, you know, Nate, you can tell me if you think this is a true read. But I think the two things that I keep going back to against a team like the Broncos is that if the Chiefs were totally on their heels and they were down, you know, 17-3 at halftime, I would still be like 98% confident they're winning that game, even if they start very flat and they don't wake up until halftime.
Yeah.
I can
put a number of scenarios where that might be the case, right? Penalties, couple turnovers, somebody fumbles, he's scoop and score, you know, deflected pick six. Like, I'm not saying this for, like, Chiefs fans to, like, start having, like, panic attacks. But you can see, like, for 30 minutes, we played, like, hot garbage. And then for the next 30 minutes, we played, like, the defending Super Bowl champs. So I can definitely see that. And maybe there's something on tape that Denver sort of exposes or exploits in one of their first drives to get up, you know. Like, look, the NFL is designed to have, you know, closer games than any other, you know, resembling football. So, it's weird because it's not the conventional trap game, I would say, where I just look at the schedule and look, it's 2020. I can barely keep up with this week. I just had to look up online. The Chiefs are playing the Miami Dolphins next, okay? So not a circle it on your calendar. Get ready for that. That is more towards the Dolphins week, actually, because you'd be coming from a primetime game to a noon kickoff.
I think that's actually a good point. And and they're better than the Broncos.
Yeah, well, they are better than the Broncos, although they did lose to the Broncos. So, again, tricky season we in. But
that's fair, yeah.
But then you could look at maybe the Dolphins being a team that's desperate for a win because they're trying to stay afloat in the AFC East, and maybe that's the trap game because you're looking forward towards the Saints and maybe the potential, the slight, slim probability that maybe Drew Brees and all of his broken ribs are back. So there's definitely a roadmap here. The likelihood of it occurring, I think, is slim. I think we both agree on that. But outside of just everything that's gone on with the Chiefs this week and what's gone on with the Broncos, it was one of the weird weeks for me, Josh. Where I'm like, you know, usually on like Monday night, Tuesday morning, I usually just click through, hit the little Game Pass condensed tab. Let's just roll through this, baby. Let's just roll what the Buccaneers doing. Now, thankfully, I saw that previously live on ESPN because it was obviously the Monday night football game. But, you know, most weeks you got to go through Game Pass and see, like, hey, you know, I saw some things on Red Zone, but, like, let's roll through it. I hope the Denver Broncos didn't watch that game last week. I hope there was no tape stuff. There's no tape session. Like,
yeah,
just send it into Saturn, okay? Because,
yes,
man, I mean, I have so much respect for Kendall because I think I lived through him on Sunday where it was just like, oh, this is what it would look like if I was in the best shape of my life. And they were still, and I was still only going to get one completion. So credit to him for soldiering on. The Broncos defense, I think, is the most translatable thing to the game, Josh, for two reasons. Mm-hmm. They actually played well in the first half. They clearly saw something from what the Saints had done previously with Tyson Hill, and they made him, you know, below average. huge.
Right.
The only reason they lost that game is because, you know, just the as the game goes along, the defense realizes, oh, we ain't going to get no points today. Like,
right.
We can't play to a 0-0 rock fight. And the Saints have good coaching staffs, and they make adjustments. And they're like, wow, Taysom Hill can't pass the ball. You know what we should do? Have him be a running back that just plays quarterback as well. Secondly, there are some things in the first matchup between Chiefs and Broncos. And I know, that game was over the moment Byron Pringle caught that kickoff. But the Chiefs offensive line, still a little shaky, just a little. The Broncos pass rush, still legitimate. And that should be the biggest thing that concerns you. There's nothing else on the team that worries me. Maybe Judy. I love Judy. God, I wish Judy had a better quarterback. And I'm saying that with Kansas City's own Drew Lock back there.
Yeah, man. You're not talking about Kendall Hinton.
No. Man, I love Jerry Judy. I loved him coming out of the draft. And it sucks when you know that dude is great and everything around him ain't as good as he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the only thing that should worry Chiefs fans, X's and O's wise, is that pass rush for the Broncos. Because that pass rush is legitimate. Like,
yeah,
you know, the Saints have a good offensive line. The Dolphins have an improving offensive line, and they made Tua get worse as the game progressed. So, for Mahomes' sake, you got to keep 15 upright. Got to keep him clean. He had a strip sack fumble last week. That's the only thing that really worries me. What if anything worries you, Josh, outside of the trappiness of this?
Well, so I'll give you kind of one thing on each side. One is I think the pass rush is a good point, and also to their credit, I mean, they're doing it without Von Miller. Like, that's, you know, the first guy you would look at to say, ah, this is where this pass rush is legit. He's not there right now. That's the main thing I think is that you could see, you know, maybe the Chiefs end up having, you know, a moment or two, they stub their toe offensively and you go like, I wish they were kind of blowing this team out. I mean, if we get here, we're doing the show on Monday and the final score of this game was, you know, 34-31, then I'll have a whole bunch of things to say about the Chiefs defense.
Mm-hmm.
I would be really surprised. I mean, and, you know, again, weird enough things could happen to where the Broncos cover, you know, plus 14. But the one thing that I think people might be thinking about, and it's, again, it's kind of the idea of the primetime trap game. But not only do I think that if they came out on their heels a little bit, they would still, you know, maybe not cover, but still definitely win. I mean, I was saying this in the off season, and so I'm going to stick to my guns on it. I don't think this team has much of, if any, look ahead in them, or like falling asleep or you know, getting satisfied and putting things on cruise control. It just doesn't. And listen, I know that I say this all the time also. So, you know, if you follow a bunch of my various spoken word mediums, you're probably sick of hearing me say this. But I try not to dig into like the locker room or like culture stuff too much because there's so much of that we don't see.
Right.
Even whenever the locker rooms are open, yes, you know, you're getting 10%. You're seeing, you know, the tip of the iceberg in that regard. This year, we're seeing less of that than ever. We're seeing what they put out on Twitter and on social and everything. So I understand there's a ton of guesswork we're doing around the edges there, but I just don't feel like literally anybody high up on this team has any of that, like, it's the Broncos, we're probably good. Because I feel like the head coach, certainly.
Right.
The coordinators, certainly. The quarterback, certainly. His main offensive weapon, certainly. They want to be the Death Star. You know, they want to go through and obliterate the rest of their division. And they know where the standards are at, not just externally, but internally. If they go out and they lay an egg on national TV against the Broncos, they're too good for that to just sort of roll off their back. Like, that'll stick to them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're, you know, maybe they end this season 500 in the AFC West if they lose in week 17 against the Chargers. No, man, there's no way. I think they could be groggy coming into this game and would still be fine. I think for the most part, we've seen, you know, a mistake here or there, like, you know, last week's less aggressiveness on fourth down, even as the Chiefs have been pretty aggressive on fourth down this year.
Right.
We've seen them stub their toe. We've seen Mecole Hardman drop a pass or whatever. But I think for the most part, those things can be explained, not explained away, just explained. And you can kind of see where that comes from. And I just don't think any of it's like, oh, they've gotten complacent or whatever. Like, I think most of these things have sort of real explanations behind them in a way that keeps me from being any sort of nervous about this game.
Yep. And, you also have to acknowledge too that they're still chasing the Steelers. Like there's still there's still something to go after because they obviously understand the importance of having a first round bye. It led to their, you know, it sparked their success to obviously becoming Super Bowl champions. If you get the bye, I think it's like 79% of the time the champion comes from the team that gets the bye. Obviously, those statistics will change over time as we only have one bye per conference. But like those guys understand the goal. So, you know, on a flow chart, it's like if you beat the Broncos, you're automatically into the playoffs. You could be terrible from this point forward and you would still be in the playoffs. You know, if they win, they still keep pressure on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know we're going to get to them later. If they win, they are still in a position to improve their play as they move closer to like January. Like this has somewhat of a memory or some, you know, parallel, I should say, to the primetime game against the Bears last year, where it was like, I mean, we're only doing this because Mahomes is playing the Chicago Bears. And NBC's like, no, child, I must keep this game. Even though there were, I believe there were like two better games per record. Last year, NBC was like, don't you even dare think about taking Patrick Mahomes from the Chicago Bears game away from us. So there's an element of the defense, and that's the game where I kind of started to believe what guys were starting to tell me in the locker room last year, which is like, if we go to Chicago and we just maul them, if we make them feel us and we don't give up any mistakes and we just play collectively together, then we should really be ready to go come January. Now, obviously, they were down 24-0 to the Texans. Believe me, I'm aware. But it was the first true sign that like they had started to turn a corner. They kind of need to do that again on defense. They are trending in a better direction, which is what I wrote earlier in The Athletic. They're having to blitz a lot more, but there's multiple guys, whether it's Juan Thornhill, Frank Clark, even, you know, young guys like L'Jarius Sneed and Mike Dana, who are getting pretty significant amounts of snaps. I know you want me to say his name. I know it's not September. Hell, I know it ain't even October no more. We are in December. I don't know what they're doing with Willie Gay Jr. Okay. I have no idea at this point. Somebody told me in training camp what the plan was. Clearly, the plan has not gone according to what they thought it was going to go. So, hey.
The crazy thing is that the person that told you that was just a dude in the parking lot. It was like, you should have really seen through that date.
So, hey, it's December. Hey, I thought Willie Gay was going to be like making inroads to be like a starter, a guy that you needed to be on the field. Pretty big game for him if you put him on the field against the Denver Broncos. So there's enough motivation, I think, around for the team, particularly on defense. And I think offensively, it's a primetime game against a division opponent, and Andy Reid usually starts to, you know, empty the creative back. And it look, like, that's how he keeps them focused. It's crazy. It's crazy that they are Super Bowl champions with the MVP, and one of the best ways the coach keeps them focused is, well, guys, I mean, if we get in the red zone, we could run some fun stuff. Like, but you got to get the ball down there. That's basically what he's telling
you. You're so right, though. I mean, you're so right, because, and man, there were a lot of questions about the Black Pearl play. Like, I believe you couched your question with, like, I'll ask about something else here.
Yes.
Which is so great. And you wrote about the trick play stuff. I mean, now, weeks ago, you went through some of that. I guess it wasn't that long. It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was after the bye.
And so, you know, we've talked about that here and like, all the questions about the one that didn't work. I just thought it was kind of funny because I don't think any of the other ones got that much attention.
Right.
But you're right that like, and that game was against, you know, that was early in the game against the Buccaneers, a really good team. But I feel like we're going to get to a point where they're up by a possession in this game and they're in the red zone and we're going to see something wonky happen. Maybe this is the Chris Jones one, you know. Maybe this is the time where Chris Jones gets to
when he's talked to Josh, he's been like, "Look, man, I got to play in the playbook," and I'm like, "Okay, but maybe you're right, Josh. Maybe this is the time to run it out there
because you know it's not gonna cost you the game if it doesn't work, but it's in prime time, so it's good for him if it does, you know. But like, you're right. I think we probably see some of those things."
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
And I mean, of all of the sort of various storylines, again, there's all of the stuff there. One thing that this is slightly different, but I'll shift gears a little bit here because it's something we talked about a lot last week. And then it seems like the Raiders rematch may have been the anomaly here, but we heard from Juan Thornhill today.
Yes.
And just as a quick crash course as to kind of where this ended up being a conversation. So, he plays 64% of the snaps in week one, coming back from the ACL. But then from weeks two through six, he plays all or almost all of the snaps in every single game. You know, he missed like five or six snaps in that four-game stretch. Then from the Denver game through the Panthers game, Denver, Jets, Carolina, he plays 68%, 84%, 81%.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes a heavy rotation part-time player, more or less the third safety, you know, the way they were using defensive backs. Some of that also was before Snead came back.
Right.
And so Spags had a lot of flexibility
and
with his
You know, they
field.
Needed him too because Bashaud Breeland had his four-game suspension. So, yeah, it was...
At the beginning,
yeah. It was kind of circumstantial, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and so then closer to full health then, and I don't know, you know, what you needed to see from Snead to be kind of full rev or whatever. But in the rematch against the Raiders, Thornhill played 11 snaps.
Wild.
And
just wild.
It's crazy. That's 19% of the snaps just to kind of keep in that format for everybody's brains. And, you know, Dan Sorensen played, I believe, 100% of the snaps in that game or very, very close to it. Tyrann Mathieu played, obviously, almost every snap all year defensively. Thornhill clearly dropped down the list. They cut Tedrick Thompson, which is fine, except for then, like, Armani Watts shows up last week and has a bad play, whatever. Just safety position has been kind of odd. But then against Tampa, he plays 69% of the snaps. And that 19%, the 11-snap game, clearly the outlier there. But around that, you know, Andy Reid said he was a rotational player, and but he was trying to get healthy. Tyrann Mathieu talked about, like, helping him understand his role.
Mm-hmm.
Spags talked about him kind of, like, getting his confidence back or whatever. It was just, I think this show, you know, between you, me, and Seth pretty unanimously was like, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean this is what's going to look like for the rest of the season, but... It was very, very, very weird. And him playing 40 snaps last week, kind of back on pace with his week one performance, I don't know if that makes it any less weird. I still have a lot of questions. What did you learn from Thornhill talking today?
Yeah, you set it up great because it's still somewhat confusing. But the way Thornhill said it but didn't quite say it like exactly that I interpret is the idea is, okay, we got you to the point where you can play every snap, right? And he's like, right. Now, are you great on every snap? And the answer, of course, is no. Like, you would have to be, not even Patrick Mahomes is great on every snap. So you're trying to understand where this person is within their role as the secondary changes. And Josh, as you know this, the secondary is like finally healthy. Like, it took 12 games, basically, for Legarius Sneed to be put in a role that they would have put him in, you know, had Bashaud Breeland not been suspended, had he not had the collarbone injury, had Tre'Davious Ward not had the hand problem, and obviously Juan Thornhill coming back off of the ACL. So what I take from this is, and I might be wrong, but it's my best guess right now, they know that they can get away with playing, I'll say this, they thought they could get away without playing Juan Thornhill because they thought for sure, kind of like me, there's no way Derek Carr's throwing the ball deep on two games against us, right? There's no way. And then halfway through the game, they were like, hey, is Juan here? Because Dean is getting cooked right now. Like, and so they've systematically figured out something on the schedule. And again, this is my best guess. I have not confirmed this, just my best guess reading everything. You know, CBS ran a statistic last week that Tom Brady hadn't completed a pass over 20 yards in like his last 20 attempts, okay? So you can think, hey, Gronk is not at his peak. Maybe Dan Sorensen can cover him. Obviously, Tyrann Mathieu's going to be around. He's the landlord. He's the honey badger. You know, we got our three corners back. Hey, dog, maybe you can just chill a little bit because he ain't throwing the ball deep anyway. Now, Drew Lock has an arm. Problem is, they don't have anybody other than Jerry Jeudy. So, like, all you got to do is double cover him, right? Maybe this is a plan to conserve him until they get to January, where they may really need him. And the team what's the team I'm thinking of right now, Josh, that you really, really need Juan Thornhill for?
You talking about the regular season? Or you're looking into the playoffs.
Looking into the playoffs. Answers. They ain't on the schedule now.
Because I was gonna say, I'm not too worried about the Saints without Taysom Hill.
Yeah, you know, or even Drew Brees coming off a rib injury. Like, how far can he throw the ball? You know that.
Yeah,
that's not shade. That's just like, hey man, like you're like when they say you come back, you're not 100%. Like I get it, like,
right?
You know.
But here's the crazy thing is I actually don't know what specific team you're thinking of come playoff time, because here's the deal. Roethlisberger can't throw deep, but they've got a ton of weapons. That Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown might be the best non-Chiefs deep threat in the NFL. Not the NFL, because the Seahawks. In the AFC. Yeah. In the AFC, at least. Josh Allen has a chooch, and then it kind of falls off after that. And I guess other than the Raiders again.
Right.
But maybe Lamar Jackson to Hollywood Brown if they're there. I mean, the AFC really does have a whole set of those guys whenever those games are going to count more.
Right. I am mostly thinking of the Pittsburgh Steelers because they have the best collection of talent where you really, really need a deep dude to be like, where are my eyes disciplined? Do I have the range? Do I have the ball skills if we both meet at the ball at the same time? Like, again, best guess, but I wonder if they're conserving his snaps to just get him to January. You know, if all things go extremely well, you get the bye week, he gets another week to, like, you know, not nurse his ACL, but obviously you're not putting a ton of wear and tear on him in terms of his workload. And then you can really just, like, hey, play free. It's the playoffs. You didn't play in the playoffs last year. I think that's something that Steve Spagnuolo is clearly aware of. Like, hey, I don't want you to get to the anniversary of your injury and then get re-hurt with something else. And you know, Josh, Steve Spagnuolo mentioned, usually when a guy comes back from an injury of this magnitude, you know, you may injure something else, which is completely understandable given all medical history when it comes to specifically playing in like the NFL or the NBA. Like, just because you come back from one knee injury doesn't mean the other knee isn't exposed more, or that you may have something wrong with the ankle. Like, they're just trying to manage him, I think, in a smart way. I assume it's smart. And also trying to conserve him so that as long as no one throws it over our heads the way we throw it over people's heads, we can get away with this. Now, you would feel better about that, I'm sure, if guys like Chris Jones and Frank Clark had more than 9.5 combined sacks all year. That's another point. Yeah. I think that's the idea. Because what I know about Ben Roethlisberger, watching him all these years, is, yeah, we can dink our dunk ourselves to 11-0. And we're going to get to them, y'all. I swear we are.
We're going to talk about them next, because I don't want to tease everybody any longer, because that game was buck wack.
We can dink and dunk our way. Hell, I can throw 7-yard slants from August all the way to December. But we all know who Ben Roethlisberger is in January. I'm going to take these hits. I'm going to stand in the pocket. You want me to stand in the pocket. And you know what? I'm going to throw this ball 45 yards down the field. And look, I think they have the best wide receivers in the AFC, not on the Chiefs roster. Like, I think the Baltimore Ravens season ended when he broke 4 tackles, y'all. 4 tackles to get in the end zone. AJ Brown. Who he a problem?
Can I say something in podcast form? Because it can't get, I can't become a tweet. I've almost tweeted this. I swear to you, I think three or four times I've literally like had my phone in my hand to type this, and I've just thought I don't want to risk it. But if I was gonna take one player from the Tennessee Titans and add him to the Chiefs, it'd be AJ Brown. Oh. I wouldn't hesitate for one gosh darn second.
Oh.
Not for a moment.
Not for a second.
Moment. Not for a moment. Derrick Henry can run in circles all he wants for the rest of the time. I don't care. If I could get A.J. Brown and just drop him on this Chiefs offense, I would do that. He might be a top five player in the league. I would do that for. I'm jumping ahead of myself, but
I mean,
I love A.J. Brown. Broke, I love watching him play football.
He broke the Ravens, y'all. Not Derrick Henry. Yeah. Derrick Henry mostly finished them, which that's what he's there to do. But he broke the Ravens. Like, broke them.
He has like the Mecole Hardman last year. Some of the stats at the top of the league in terms of yards per reception, it was him and Mecole Hardman. Except for he also occasionally like he's yoked like DK Metcalf. Like I love AJ Brown.
but I think the Steelers have the multi, because I love, like, I adored Chase Claypool the moment I laid eyes on him on YouTube.com.
I think about how much you loved him
back in the
regularly.
Draft. Yeah.
Yeah, because we talked about him on this show. Yep. You're like, listen, it was the receiver out of Florida who I wanted to call Van Jones, but that's the CNN guy, right?
Yes, Van Jefferson. Yes, he's
Van Jefferson.
Yeah, he's been good
you.
This year too. Yes. Mm-hmm.
He has been good, but you were like, keep an eye on him and on this Chase Claypool. You know what? I will. And I've been watching Chase Claypool.
Yeah. And then I talked to Chase Claypool. Then I talked to Chase Claypool at the combine the last time traveled. And I was like, I wanted to text everybody in the organization and be like, y'all know who this dude is, right? Like, I'm not trying to do y'all's job. I'm just here to observe and report the news. But y'all know about him, right? And like Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been everything the Chiefs have needed for like 80% of the season. That dude is the offensive rookie of the year. It's Chase Claypool. I don't care about Joe Burrow. I mean, I do care about him, of course. I don't care about, you know, who else. Like, I mean, I love Justin Herbert. God knows we all saw him first, okay? We could all say that this dude came out, like, I'm playing? Like, he came off the sideline.
He looks good.
And we all saw him first, so I get it. Justin Herbert, great, great player for a rookie. I think Chase Claypool's the best rookie in the league that plays on offense. And I would just love to see him against the Chiefs secondary, because I think that's a really intriguing matchup with a quarterback who can throw the ball time with accuracy and still has a strong enough arm to get the ball downfield. Now, they tried it yesterday against the Ravens, and the Ravens are like, nah, dog. But, hey, in terms of Juan Thornhill, he's a massive part to this season. But I do know, and maybe this will be reported, you know, a couple weeks from now. But I do know it puts that much of a burden physically, emotionally, and we've discussed them before, on Tyrann Mathieu. Man, they're putting everything on that dude. And he's so good with knowing that Juan's behind him for the ranginess to be his best, you know, his best version of a football player. But man, taking Juan and, you know, removing him from a few snaps to get him ready for January, because again, he never played in the playoffs last year because of his ACL, does put a burden on Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Wednesday afternoon, Sunday night football here in a second. But do you have a feel for the Broncos game goes? A little dismount here on what we expect from primetime here?
You said the spread was 14?
Yeah, so I have ESPN says 14 on the dot right now on their little game cast thing.
I mean, that's it definitely makes me think about it, cuz yeah, I mean, I think the Chiefs will win.
Do you have any idea what their record, what the Chiefs' record against the spread is this year? I don't.
It was very good early in the year. I do remember, like, hearing statistics about, like, well, you know, Andy Reid in September, like, just take it to the bank. But, like, clearly, you know, teams like the Panthers and obviously what the Raiders have done have made, I think, the Chiefs a little less predictive in terms of the spread. So they were great early on. But I don't know what exactly. I feel like the Chiefs will win. I know Seth has told me, like, in our own conversation, he's like, it should be double digits. It should be, you know, two scores. I kind of tend to agree with him. But, you know, the Broncos were the league's biggest embarrassment last week. Like, let's not forget that. So, the Broncos will be on national television. I do want to give them the benefit of the doubt, as, you know, we could also whisper into Drew Lock's ear, like, you've never come close to being a football team with Patrick Mahomes on the field?
It just seems impossible. Yeah, I see it. I see minus 14 another spot. Also, it looks like minus 14 is pretty.
They win, but like I don't know if it'll be 14 or more.
Yeah, I feel very, very good about the Chiefs winning this game. I similarly think have a little hesitance around four. The thing there here. Let me ask it this way. You could probably bet on this somewhere. I'm not going to encourage it because I watch enough football to know that betting on football is an absolute sucker's game, and a lot of us are suckers. I get it. But do you think that they are up by 14 at any point, like in the second half? Because my hunch there would be yes.
Sure. Yeah, I would say sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. If I had to give you a number, they've been pretty good at landing in the 30s against teams that aren't, you know, the Bucks.
Not contenders.
That game should have been in the 40s, but or in the 30s. But yeah. It was 35 against the Raiders, 33 against the Panthers, 35 against the Jets. As a reminder, first Broncos game was 43-16. That would have covered a 14-point spread. I like a little, like, give me a little 34 to... Well, I was going to say 34-20. That's 17. Damn you, baby.
On the holes. On the nose.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I'm going to stick to it. I like 34-20. Don't bet on football.
Don't.
You're going to lose your house.
Hey. I know it's enticing because you're like, hey, get more Christmas things for more of my friends and family. But you could also lose things that you could get for your friends
That's
and
right.
family on Christmas.
That's right. Anyway, it ought to be fun. I've enjoyed the primetime games and you know, getting to keep an eye on the rest of the league before that. Probably means we're going to have a podcast that'll come out a little later on Monday, though, if I had to guess.
Yeah, so, I would assume
so. It's got its pluses and minuses. Let's talk about that Steelers game. That was the game did actually get played against all odds, and the NFL made it happen. And at the end, it got a little bit close. But what did you think about the two teams that you saw? One quarterbacked by RG3 until it wasn't anymore, and then the other one, the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers, dinking and dunking it to a narrow victory over a team that ended the game with Trace McSorley at quarterback, I believe.
Who I didn't even know was in the league.
Yeah, me neither.
Great game. Great, terrible game. Like, I was watching it as I was writing my story that came out on Wednesday as well. I don't want the league to do this. I would like to keep the weekend schedule going. But hey, a nice little surprise with some... I'd be truly atrocious football. I'm not the first person to say that it looked like both teams didn't practice because, like, hey, we all know the realities of 2020. Divisional game. So NBC got the benefit of, like, this game should be close because these two teams know one another, and the Ravens kind of needed to keep their season afloat, and it sucks because, like, you know, Lamar's not there. But, you know, I still have a lot of respect for RG3. Given the whole arc of his career, like, we don't think of him the same way we think of Alex Smith, but like, whew, man, I would love to have long conversations with either one of those dudes. The Steelers are fine. The Steelers are good. Their record is what it says it is. Do we want to crown them, Josh?
I personally do not want to crown
them. Yeah. So, you know, a lovely friend, a lovely person who, you know, just happens to follow, I think, most of us on Twitter, sure. Sent a message, and I think this was early today at 1:48 a.m. on the lovely website called twitter.com, where he tagged me, Josh, and Seth. What do y'all think it is? It is a quoted tweet of NFL memes. Now, how much should I take this seriously?
I don't think I've seen this tweet yet, so I'm very excited.
I'm going to send it to you via text messaging as
excellent.
We speak, sir.
But excellent, excellent.
The handle is NFL_memes. Do I follow it? No. Am I here for a reason? Yes. So, they created a graphic, and it's accurate. Ooh, it's accurate. It ain't great. But it says that the Steelers have had a cakewalk schedule. Like, they've just said it, and let me just copy and paste for the group. Now, we're gonna go through the schedule. I know this is terrible. Okay. podcast/radio.
It No. It's all right. First of all, it's a sports radio staple. And second of all, if anyone hasn't done this yet, they're going to be very surprised.
Week one. The graphic says they beat Daniel Jones. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. Week two, they barely beat the Broncos. Because you have to remember, the Broncos came down from like 20-something points and made it close. Mm-hmm. Week three, they beat Bill O'Brien. We all know that. Shout out to
this me. Is what this is what the graphic says. Yeah, so everyone knows. It says week one beat Daniel Jones. Week two barely beat Broncos. Week three beat Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. Week four beat Carson Wentz. Now you could say, hey, at one point in time, Carson Wentz was like the darling of the NFL. They've had terrible drafts and they get injured all the time. So sure. They beat the Browns. They called the Browns overrated. I tend to agree with them because they've also had a cakey schedule. Week five, they were, the graphic says they were bailed by the refs versus the Titans. Now I understand what the graphic is saying here. One, have the Steelers had a bye week? Not by normal definitions, but
no,
they did beat the Titans. And look, the Titans also came back late. Was there pass interference? Did he make the field goal? He didn't. Hey, your record is what your record is. They're moving on. They barely beat the Ravens, and this is also true. And Lamar almost had a chance at a heroic, you know, fourth quarter comeback. But hey, Minka Fitzpatrick made a great play on the ball. I don't think it's pass interference. Whatever. They beat the Ravens. We all were circling our calendars for the matchup. Y'all, they barely beat the 3-8 Cowboys. Like, let's be real. Like, they barely.
That game got close.
They barely beat the 3-8 Cowboys. They sleptwalked. As we all say,
that game was 19-3 at halftime.
Wow.
Excuse me. 13-9 at halftime. I can't read. And then it was 19-9 going into the fourth quarter.
So look, the graphic says they barely beat the 3-8 Cowboys. Again,
it's true.
These are facts. They beat the 2-win Bengals. Hey, we chalked it up even before we got on. And then they put the Jaguars logo and said, beat Jake Linton, which is kind of fair. I mean, like, also the graphic could have said, beat the tanking Panthers because the tanking Jaguars, because the Jaguars are taking hard. They just waiting on you to make a mistake. Adam Gase just waiting on it. And then of course, you know, Wednesday night football on an afternoon, not on Thanksgiving. Actually, a week after Thanksgiving. Hey, and they barely beat the Ravens practice squad in third string quarterback, which is also true. So
here's the thing. It's all true.
It's all true. Like I was willing to be like, okay, what's this nonsense that's out here on Twitter? And then I read the graphic and I was like, I've got to mention this on Times Ours because Steelers overrated? Question mark. I don't know.
Here's where I'm at on this. Because here's the thing. Everything you just said is true. I've gotten a little bit, I've lost a little bit of my patience around the conversation because and this might just be Twitter, but every single cell of this conversation is toxic in its own way, where it's just like, the Steelers are overrated. They actually stink. And then it's like, how can you say the Steelers are overrated? They're 11-0. Like, the NFL hates the Steelers. The NFL loves the Steelers. Like, it's just, there's no breathing. There's no space to breathe anywhere within that. Here's where I'm at. Here's what I think is duly true. As you have so artfully put it, the record is what it says it is. They're 11-0. They're undefeated. If they go beat Alex Smith, Josh Allen, whoever's playing quarterback for the Bengals, Phil Rivers, and Baker Mayfield, if they win those five games, they'll be 16-0, and they will be rightfully deserving of the number one seed in the AFC and that first round bye. And their only bye of the year. They will deserve that if they also win these next five games and they go 16-0. If they go 16-0 and then they, you know, they get that bye week and then maybe they get a rematch with the Colts or something like that, or maybe they get the Titans in the wild card game, mm-hmm. or the divisional round game. You know, God bless them. I could see them winning that game, absolutely. And if they host the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs, and everybody, both of those teams are healthy by the time they get there, and the Steelers are 17-0 at that point, and the Chiefs are 16-1, or God forbid, 15-2 at that point. Mm-hmm. Counting, actually, they'd have to have another round. It'd be 16-2 17-1. Yeah, wherever the Chiefs end up there, if the Steelers are still undefeated, the Chiefs have an extra game under their belt, all that, and if they face off in Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game, I'll go ahead and take the Chiefs -3.5 on the road, because I think that's what the line should probably be. Is that disrespectful to the Steelers? I don't care. I don't know. Maybe. I don't mean for it to be. I just think they're, I think they are a good team that's not the best team in their conference. Meh. Okay. Sue me. That's fine.
Right. In a division that we thought was going to be better and actually,
Tell you what, here on that same note, you take this to a Steelers fan. Hey, Steelers fans, do you think the Browns are overrated at 8-3? Because I'm going to say this. I think the Browns, deserving of their 8-3 record and whatever that might bring them in terms of a playoff spot, they're 8-3. Yes. They also beat the Bengals and Washington and the Cowboys and the Bengals again and the Eagles and the Jags. And they're going to get the Giants and the Jets. They're going to win at least 10 games. And I don't think they're that good. Your division's got a little bit of a cakey schedule. Sorry about
it. Yeah, it happens. They are good because they have a great coach. Yes, I said great when it comes to Mike Tomlin. And they have a great quarterback. They have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. Just start right there. They're obviously a good team. They have an interesting scheme. It sucks that Bud Dupree tours ACL. They're starting to have some injuries on the defensive side of the ball. But look, TJ Watt, legitimate player, legitimate, you know, defensive player of the year, candidate in the non-Aaron Donald category in my eyes. But like, hey, really good football player. Minkah Fitzpatrick, they made a trade that honestly was more successful than I thought it was going to be, because I thought it was going to benefit the Dolphins, and it has. It clearly has, but I thought it was going to be a little bit more one-sided. They're a good team. For the last, month, Josh, we've been forced to watch Steelers football.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, this is us. I got it. It's in Pittsburgh. Do I now have to watch the Steelers every week, too? All that's to say is I want to see this game, whether it's divisional, whether it's championship. Like, I want to see this game because obviously they're not on each other's schedules. And I do think there is serious questions to how long they can keep this up. And listen to me, Chiefs fans. You're rooting your hearts out for Phillip Rivers. Think about that.
Yes. And you know what? Let yourself. It's going to feel good. You can finally do it guilt-free.
And not in the way where you're like, Phillip, all I need is one more pick, baby. One more pick. You're not going to be saying that no more. You're going to be like, Phillip, get your team to the playoffs. And in order to do that, you kind of got to beat the Steelers probably. Like, you know, so I have some faith in Josh Allen. They did beat the Steelers last year, but obviously Ben Roethlisberger was not on the field. Neither was Chase Claypool. Mm-hmm. So I think the season comes down to that Bills game and to that Colts game. Obviously, the Chiefs have to keep pace. That's one of the carrots still left on their schedule. If they clinch their division on Sunday against the lovely Denver Broncos, but I'm fascinated to see the matchup, because even when Mahomes torched the Steelers, I don't feel like that was the Steelers. I feel like that was them kind of going through a little bit of a valley as they mm-hmm. as they start to rebuild around Ben Roethlisberger in a really interesting manner. So I don't know, Josh, but I just know, like, start thinking about later this month, you're just going to be rooting for Phillip Rivers in a Colts uniform.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I've always wanted to have a reason to root for Phillip Rivers in a meaningful way. I'm totally here for that. Here's a question I have for you. Let me float this out there. Tell me how this sounds. I'm going to just say it as a factual statement. You tell me how this sounds, because I think I might believe it, but I'm gonna see how it sounds coming out of my mouth first. I think that the Steelers are more the Titans than they are the Chiefs.
That is intriguing.
Because here's where I'm at. Here's where I'm at. There was the tweet, and this is, I'm only using his name because he said it, but like Aaron Schatz, who I think does typically really great work with Football Outsiders, he had a tweet that made its way around a couple days ago about, like, I don't know how we, actually might have been yesterday, these days have been long, like, I don't know how this narrative that the Chiefs are unbeatable got around there. They lost the Raiders. Listen, you're never gonna hear me say, oh, the Chiefs are actually unbeatable, because they lost the Raiders. I also am saying the Steelers are undefeated, not unbeatable.
Right.
I think that if you had the Steelers and Titans play, you know, 100 times in a simulation, the Steelers probably win like 60 of those or something like that. I think if the Chiefs and Steelers played 100 times, the Chiefs probably win like 70 of those or something. But that even those spreads there might be too extreme. I don't know, because football is wild that way. But I kind of think the Steelers and Titans occupy a similar space for me of like teams that could absolutely beat the Chiefs on a Chiefs like B day and they're on an A game day. And I don't think either of them are beating the Chiefs firing on all cylinders. I think the Chiefs are unbeatable if they play their best game, not because, you know, it's unstoppable, but because I don't think anybody else's best game stands up against the Chiefs' best game.
Right. I think that
maybe Seattle if their defense is, but I think that's kind of 2018 Chiefs.
Like, I can't trust that defense against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy play calling.
The Chiefs Seahawks Super Bowl probably ends kind of like the 2018 AFC Championship game. Honestly,
right. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the Tennessee Titans when they're doing their best with the protocols. I want to make that distinction. I really respect the Tennessee Titans. They've actually, I think, gotten better. They are more seasoned now for what lies ahead in January, because last year was such a joyride for them, and then the run happened, and then like reality started to set in. But hey, that happens. You know, it's like some NBA teams have to get to the conference finals to realize, oh, this is what it takes to get to the NBA finals. Like, the Titans are clearly in that sort of thought process where like, hey, now we kind of know. And now we know some of these games in October, like, yeah, we could have played better, but we want to be our best selves come Thanksgiving. And they've really started to find true momentum. I mean, they smashed the Colts. You know, and they got some little payback from earlier in the year. I feel like if you had to, you know, if we have to do the power rankings now, I think, because they're undefeated and because they have Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, Mike Tomlin, I still think the Steelers are the top contender for the Chiefs in the AFC, but the Titans are right behind them because of obviously the two players we've mentioned earlier, and Ryan Tannehill does not suck. He's good. Put him in the Pro Bowl.
I feel better about
already.
Tannehill than I did at this point last year. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, put him in the Pro Bowl. They got a good coach who knows how to scheme things up in a way that you know, gives them their strengths. It's weird that like Mike Vrabel and Brian Flores are the best coaches to ever come out of Bill Belichick's tree. It's wild. But it's funny. I do think those are the top two teams. It would obviously be fun if we got Raiders Chiefs part three. I'm not saying I don't want that, or I wouldn't be interested in seeing it. You know, even Chiefs Browns would be a little throwback to Big 12 football.
Yeah,
so
that would be fun.
You know, go get in there, Browns. Go get to the playoffs.
Bring me Josh Allen again. I'd be down with that.
Yeah, sure. Bring him to Arrowhead.
Most of those matchups will be fun.
Yeah, I mean, just so. But I think you're right, Josh. I think the Titans really do need to be discussed, especially if they go, you know, 3-1, 4-0 to end the season. And you know, I mean, the odds are against the Steelers, but their schedule is undefeated. Like it can happen, which is, you know, which is intriguing. All of this leads me to the story I did in June, and I'm going to start referencing it more and more because it's one thing that I really enjoyed like taking a deep dive into. But look, the Chiefs are trying to do what the 2004 Patriots did, right? Trying to be back-to-back champions, last team to do it, right, Josh?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like you're rolling. I was over here pumping. I was pumping my fist in the air. I was waiting on. Yeah.
So,
yes, sir.
So they're trying to be the 2004 Patriots. The coaching staff is intact. They got the Hall of Fame quarterback. They got the Hall of Fame coach. The defense.
All true.
The defense wants to get better. Same as 03 to 04. Here's the thing that shocked me. I forgot that the 2004 Patriots did not have home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Really?
They did not. The Pittsburgh Steelers under a new young Ben Roethlisberger went 15-1 in, let me remind you, a weakened schedule.
Oh, man.
And the AFC Championship game was at Heinz Field. And I have watched plenty of documentaries. I have read plenty of stories about this. Obviously, I went through Pro Football Reference and statistically went through this. You can YouTube this game right now. The Patriots were the defending champions, and the Steelers were the team who had the better record. And that tells you the outcome. So, I'm not saying history is necessarily going to repeat, but I'm saying that there's history to have a clear understanding of what may occur for the remainder of this month. Like, if the Steelers go 15-1 or 16-0, they can be very 2000s, you know, 4-ish, where, you know, the other team has Patrick Mahomes, you know, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Le'Veon Bell, you know, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, you know, like a defensive coordinator that's done it two places in Steve Spagnuolo, Tyrann Mathieu, and Juan Thornhill, who's never played in the playoffs. I'm not trying to be super predictive, but I am saying that there's history here. So I don't know how many Steelers fans listen to this podcast. I'm sorry that I have to mention 2004, but in the context of the Chiefs season, you can obviously go back and say it's been done before because the New England Patriots went down there and just put some whoop on them, man. I mean, whoo! I'd have to go back to see what the final score was, but it wasn't close at halftime.
So I like that. I like that comp a lot. That's very good. We're almost out of showtime here. So we've covered our Chiefs Broncos bases. We cannot be blamed if they lose this game.
Hey, we said it might be Trappy and Kitchen Seeky. We can't don't put that on us.
No, we're clear now. We've done our part. We've talked about the Steelers. We've talked about the first round bye. We've compared it back to the 03 or 04 Patriots. Is there anything else we need to talk about, or should we do like a minute on quarterbacks and COVID and then call this a day?
Yes, you are right. Go ahead, sir. That is a great point.
Okay. So, in case you missed this, as previously discussed, the Broncos tried to get an assistant coach to play quarterback. The NFL said no, thank you. So they said, all right, we'll pull up a wide receiver from our practice squad who played quarterback for a minute in college, and we're going to make him play quarterback. He threw two picks and one completion. It wasn't good, I would say.
He's better at football than you are better at your profession. Just think about that.
Oh, 100%.
Just think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it was 1 for 9 for 13 yards and two picks. Believe it or not, I don't have it in front of me, but I do think that's what it was. He had that performance, and he was barely the worst quarterback on the field that day.
You ain't lying. No.
Did I say it? Oh, I did.
You ain't lying, though.
I said
though.
It. Oh, no. Oh, tweet me. See if I care. I got a lot of angst about Taysom Hill for some reason. It's completely irrational. the Broncos go through all that because Jeff Driscoll, I think, was the one who actually tested positive for COVID.
Yes, that's correct.
Then that entire quarterback room, Drew Locke, Blake Bortles, somebody else whose name I've deleted because I can't remember. I feel like there was a fourth quarterback in that mix. Do you remember who it is?
Well, I don't.
Is there another
I don't
one?
Remember who it is, but I know they did sign Pat Shurmur's kid, Kyle Shurmur.
Yeah, so Kyle Shurmur's on the roster.
Yes, he's on the
now.
Roster now because of in the aftermath of this debacle.
Yes. So all that mess happens. Brett Rypien. Sorry for Brett Rypien that I continue to
also the son of a former NFL quarterback.
Yeah, son of Cal Rypien Jr., I believe. That was a joke. Just so everybody knows. That's a tweet I don't want. I don't want you to tweet me about Cal. That it's spelled and pronounced completely differently than the Iron Man shortstop / third baseman. All of that notwithstanding. They go through that whole process, and then now they're keeping Blake Bortles away from the facility to keep that from happening again. They're going to have him, you know, reporting virtually and all that stuff. And that's a conversation that a lot of people had asked Reed about over the course of this whole COVID protocol year. Like, hey, will you keep a quarterback isolated? You know, because it was Jordan Tamu for a while that was, you know, he was QB4. Right. He got cut after he was on the COVID list. Now they've got Chad Henne. Do you want to keep Matt Moore virtual? Andy Reid has said no. He got asked about that again yesterday, and he said exactly what I expected him to say on that subject. Nate, can you unpack that a little bit?
Andy Reid was like, hey, we put the quarterbacks in a bigger room. I guess it used to be a room that was for staff. I don't necessarily know what that means, if that's coaching staff or if that's like player personnel departments. Like, you're not sure. But, like, they're in a bigger room now, and Andy Reid used the word flawless to assess the level of mask wearing that goes on between Matt Moore, Chad Henne, and Patrick Mahomes. None of those players have been on the COVID list for close contact or obviously contracting the virus. And then Patrick Mahomes came up after Andy Reid on Zoom and said, yes, there are times where we have to meet both in person and virtually to get the whole quarterback conversation, the quarterback meeting to be conducted, right? So Mike Kafka is usually the fifth member because you can have five people in the room, right? So if it's the three quarterbacks and Andy Reid and or Eric Bieniemy, then maybe Mike Kafka is the guy that's saying, hey, here's how we're installing these plays for the Denver Broncos. Here's how the game plan goes. Pat, what do you think? Oh, what do you see here from this DB, Matt Moore? Okay, Chad Henne, how does this compare to what we did, you know, a month ago against the Broncos? All that happens. But if you add receivers, if you add a tight end, if you add in somebody from the coaching staff, whether it's, you know, Greg Lewis or Andy Heck from an offensive line standpoint, Greg Lewis is the receivers coach, of course. If you need Dylan McCullough to give you an understanding of like what the running backs are thinking on a particular snap for the quarterbacks to get a better understanding of how to exchange the ball or where they should be on a certain, you know, route, then that person needs to leave the room. I think only the quarterbacks stay. And so it's a rotation of the three quarterbacks and whoever else is needed at that time. And then if you are going to stay in the meeting, you need to do it virtually at another, you know, location in the facility. So there's only five people in a spread out room, more than 6 feet between them in terms of distance. And if you got to stay in the meeting, but we need the coach who's leading the discussion at this moment, then everybody else needs to leave outside of Patrick Mahomes, Chad Henne, and Matt Moore.
And that basically, we just got the most detailed version of that, what you just explained. We got a lot of that from Reid, some of that from Mahomes. Actually, a lot of that from Mahomes. He kind of went through some of the details on Wednesday. That, I imagine, has been, you know, with some tweaks over the course of the year. That I think that's more or less kind of what Reid had gotten, and with help from Rick Burkholder, who's apparently back in the building, by the way, after reportedly testing positive.
That is COVID, correct.
Which is just a good thing to hear. That plan sort of seemed like, it seems like Andy Reid's been comfortable with that from the jump. And also, it's one of those places where Andy Reid is occasionally kind of old school, even with how new school his offense can often be. Like, he would say, no, we're going to get into a big ass room and we're going to have our contact tracers that are going to ding if they need to ding. And if they ding, we got to get out of the way. You're going to keep on your mask and we're all going to be in this room and then we're going to be on that field and we're going to have hands-on, in-person, you know, experiences here that he thinks if we follow all the rules we have in place, we'll be able to do that safely. And so far, so good.
Yeah. And the Chiefs are one of the few teams, because The Athletic, I'll give a little secret, The Athletic is compiling every team's COVID list. And so I've been able to see other teams' lists, obviously. Man, you look at the Ravens and it just makes you so sad, just from like a human element, because you can kind of, based on the dates, you can kind of see, much like, you know, any corporation or any, you know, family that has to go through this, you can kind of see how the virus has, you know, unfortunately spread. So the Chiefs, in looking at the data that we're going to print out, I think next week, I mean, sorry, but I kind of gave some secrets, but like, we at The Athletic have,
Danielle, <bleep it.
laughs> we at The Athletic have put together the entire COVID list to our best understanding in talking with every team and obviously the transactional wire from the league. The Chiefs are one of the better teams who have been able to, you know, mostly escape this. Now, I think the most prominent player who's gotten COVID is Mecole Hardman. He was the emergency player for the Raiders game, the rematch. But then when Byron Pringle got hurt is why he played his snaps. He actually had a very important completion on the game-winning drive. But, you know, the Chiefs have been commended so far because of Rick Burkholder and the work of, you know, obviously Andy Reid and the entire athletic training staff. They were the first team, right, to get their COVID plan basically approved by both the league and the Players Association, obviously because they were going to play the first game this season, hosting the Texans on September 10th. But they've done everything as best they can. And what appears to me in talking to a couple people in the organization is when COVID has impacted the Chiefs, whether it's Anthony Sherman or from a close contact situation, they have the sense that it's from the outside, from the actual world, you know, that we're all living in, and the facility has been mostly maintained in a tight, orderly manner. So they deserve praise for that. Obviously, they've tried to keep people as safe as they can. And look, as we all go out throughout our days, you do your best with the information available to you, and then hopefully everybody stays healthy.
There we go. That seems like a good enough spot to jump off as any. You can enjoy our coverage over the course of the weekend, and you follow us on Twitter and whatnot during the Chiefs-Broncos game. Nate is at by Nate Taylor. I'm at JB Briscoe. The absent but soon to be returning Seth Kaiser is at Real MN Chiefs Fan on Twitter. You can also check out, I'm not actually sure what Seth's plan is for this week in terms of if he's doing anything else up on The Athletic, but obviously, Nate, you've got the stories from this week already up there. Going back to the Bucs game, if you missed that, and then also looking at you know, Sammy Watkins' return and where the Chiefs' offense is at right now, you can go read about that up on The Athletic right now. And I think that's more or less it. Did we cover everything? And if so, you can just say yes and then say something snazzy in the episode.
Yes, and I can tell you, somebody has told me that I work with that maybe there will be a Seth Kaiser article by the time you hear this on the Kansas City Ooh. Chiefs.
Ooh, stupendous.
Yeah, so tremendous. Shout out to Seth again. He's working four jobs, y'all. Lastly, I know I kind of whispered a fact about Drew Lock. It would be great if nobody whispered to Drew Lock that he hasn't come close to beating a Patrick Mahomes team yet. It would be stupendous if we just didn't let that happen.
Also, I just to add on to that, I wouldn't whisper near Drew Lock because he probably won't have his mask on.
Hey, hey! Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.